I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Change of schedule. Amid news about the Holy Father's health, the Vatican also provides an update on an upcoming Jubilee event. The President and the Prime Minister. President Donald Trump hosts UK leader Keir Starmer to discuss the war in Ukraine. We're at the White House. Targeting tariffs. The Trump administration also makes a major announcement about trade with China, Mexico, and Canada. Plus, faith and America. A new study examines the number of Christians in the United States. We have analysis. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, the Holy Father remains in a hospital in Rome, but is showing signs of improvement, according to the Vatican. Because of the complexity of the clinical picture, the Pope still needs to extend his hospital stay. EWTN News correspondent Colin Flynn has more.
Good evening, Tracy. More good news this evening from the Vatican here in Rome, as they've told us that Pope Francis's health continues to improve as he remains in the Gemelli Hospital for 2 weeks now. This is the longest hospital stay of his entire pontificate. Now, in this latest statement, they haven't used the word critical, but they are using the word complex. We're told that the Holy Father alternated between using high-flow oxygen therapy and an oxygen mask. Again, they repeated what we've been saying for the past few days, which is, quote, given the complexity of the clinical picture, further days of clinical stability are required to resolve the prognosis. They ended the statement by talking a little bit about the Pope's schedule today, saying that the Holy Father dedicated his morning to respiratory physiotherapy and also resting, while in the afternoon he had another physiotherapy session, and then he prayed in the chapel of his private room up on the 10th floor. He received the Eucharist and then dedicated the rest of his day to work. We're also told by the Vatican that the Saturday Jubilee audience has been cancelled. Well, tonight, again at 9 p.m. Rome time, thousands gathered for the nightly rosary. This is the fourth night. And earlier, Cardinal Kurt Koch from Switzerland talked to EWTN News. He spoke about what the rosary in St. Peter's Square was like last night.
I have the impression that it was a very good and pious atmosphere. I think all members of the Roman Curia who are able to come are present. And many, many people, many faithful are there. And this is a very beautiful sentiment of community, to be united in prayer. And when we pray, we are aware that now we make all the best for the Pope. It's another who is in favor for the Pope. And to give our concern in the hands of God, that God can make what he will within this world.
Well, that's the update from the Vatican here in Rome. We'll have more as soon as we get it. But in the meantime, Colin Flynn for EWTN News Nightly.
Okay, thank you, Colin. Around the world, prayers and masses are being held in support of the Holy Father. In Argentina, people hold a special place in their heart for the country's native son. Hundreds turned out for a mass presided over by the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, who said, "May our prayer be the breath of air that Pope Francis's lungs need. Do not slow down." And for more on what's happening in the Pope's home country of Argentina, let's bring in Julieta Nassau. She is the digital editor of the foreign desk at La Nación. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. So, Julieta, tell us what the mood is like there right now.
Well, first of all, Tracy, thanks a lot for having me. What we have seen there in the mass in Plaza Constitución, what you were showing minutes ago, that was the biggest event here in Buenos Aires. And it was called, as you said, by the Archbishop of Buenos Aires, Jorge García Cuerva. Remember that Pope Francis was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires before he was elected Pope. So hundreds of people went there to wish him well. Remember, this was on Monday, last Monday, and the weekend was very complicated. And here in Argentina, there was a huge worrisome about Pope Francis. And after that, also there was the image of Pope Francis illuminating the obelisk, that it's an emblematic monument here in downtown Buenos Aires, and also with wishes of recovery.
And we're all praying for the Holy Father, and it really is means probably a little bit more to you all there in Argentina as well, because he is a native son. What else are the Argentinians doing as far as prayer, masses, anything else going on in support of the Holy Father?
Sure. There's also, like always in here in Argentina, there is a political debate as well, because Javier Milei, that's the president of Argentina, he tweets a lot, but he hasn't tweeted about the health of Pope Francis, and that has been a debate in here, because they saw each other last year, but still they had a complicated relationship, because Milei, before getting elected, he criticized a lot Pope Francis. He even said that he was the representative of evil here in Earth. So after that, they had a complicated relationship. So besides, of course, all the prayers for Pope Francis, there is a political debate about this situation, and that Javier Milei, as the president of all of the Argentinian people, should say something publicly about Pope Francis.
Indeed. You know, tell us a little bit more, Julieta, you know, what the Holy Father means to the people of Argentina and Latin America.
Well, let me tell you that all of we here in Argentina remember what happened on the 13th of March of 2013. It was a historic day here in Argentina. Of course, it was the first Latin American pope and the first Argentinian pope. So it was huge in here. The reporter of our newspaper, La Nación, said in a little space in a note that Jorge Bergoglio was an option for becoming a pope, but still we couldn't believe that until we heard that announcement on that March the 13th. So that day was a day of pride, a day of joy, and after that there was a lot of enthusiasm. But, of course, it's been a lot of years. It's been almost 12 years since then. And as I said before here, at least in Argentina, politics and religion is many times mixed. And after that, he never came back to Argentina. And what people around Pope Francis said here in Argentina, it was because he didn't want to be used politically. So still, even if he didn't come here, it was a motive of debate here in Argentina, but still there's a lot of Catholic people that are really enthusiastic about him and are still waiting for him to come here to Argentina.
Well, Julieta, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. We appreciate it. God bless you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. Our President Donald Trump welcomes British Prime Minister Keir Starmer to the White House. The focus, Ukraine, and how to bring peace after 3 years of brutal conflict. Today's meeting also comes just one day before Trump hosts Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, good evening to you. Tonight, President Trump wants a deal to end the war in Ukraine. Of course, what that looks like remains uncertain. I was able to ask him about it earlier today.
Outside the West Wing, President Donald Trump greets British Prime Minister Keir Starmer. I asked the president this.
President Trump, can you get a peace deal done in Ukraine?
Yes, we can.
How confident are you, sir?
We can. We will. Thank you.
Then inside the Oval Office, the two sit down for bilateral discussions.
We've had very good talks with Russia, and we've had very good talks, as you know, with Ukraine.
Thank you for changing the conversation to bring about the possibility that now we can have a peace deal.
Their meeting comes as the war in Ukraine continues into its fourth year. Here, security video capturing a recent direct hit on an apartment building in Ukraine. If a truce can be reached, Starmer and French President Macron have agreed to send troops for a potential peacekeeping mission to ensure that fighting between Ukraine and Russia doesn't flare up again. Whether Russian President Vladimir Putin, holding talks today with a North Korean delegation in Moscow, agrees to any peace deal is unknown. But Starmer is trying to convince President Trump that a lasting peace in Ukraine will endure only if Kyiv and European leaders are at the table. The White House pushing back on the notion that Trump is ignoring Europe. But just the other day, Russia's foreign minister saying Russia cannot consider any options of deploying peacekeepers to Ukraine or any agreement to pump Ukraine with weapons again. Later, after their initial meeting, both Trump and Starmer took more questions from reporters in the East Room.
Our approach is basically common sense. As I said, so many of the things that we do are based on common sense. If you want peace, you have to talk both sides.
We agree history must be on the side of the peacemaker, not the invader. So the stakes, they couldn't be higher.
Tomorrow, President Trump welcomes Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky here. They'll sign a critical minerals agreement to help pay for U.S. military support for the war. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. And President Trump also making it clear that he won't back down on imposing tariffs on China, Mexico, and Canada.
I'm not
stopping the tariffs. No, millions of people have died because of the fentanyl that comes over the border. We've lost millions of people due to fentanyl. It comes mostly from China, but it comes through Mexico and it comes through Canada.
Trump adding on Truth Social today that he plans to add a 10% universal tariff charged on imports from China and expects that these new measures will enforce other countries to crack down on the trafficking. Meanwhile, federal downsizing is underway in Washington. USAID workers were given just 15 minutes to clear out their workspaces. Those leaving the D.C. headquarters on Thursday were greeted by supporters.
We're here today to show support for our colleagues and friends, both Foreign Service and Civil Service, who are coming here to the Reagan Building to pack up their belongings, and they're being sent home today. And we're just here to say thank you for your service. We appreciate everything you've done and all the sacrifices you've made in service to your country.
It is part of President Trump and the Department of Government Efficiency's plan to shrink the federal government and to cut down on spending. The move is raising some serious concerns about the future of the vital programs the agency has been providing to communities in need. While thousands of children remain targets for human trafficking and exploitation, and many of them remain nameless, Congress continues to look at ways to stop predators and identify those missing. But recently, Democrats are crying foul, worried that money could be drying up soon. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales explains. Eric?
Good evening, Tracy. No one would argue sex trafficking is a major problem. It's found in all 50 states. But Democrats used today's hearing to call out the Trump administration, claiming a funding freeze and massive layoffs are making efforts to fight human trafficking worse.
Just last week, we learned that the Department of Homeland Security has ordered its entire investigative division, 6,000 agents, to stop focusing on drug dealers, terrorists, and human traffickers, and instead prioritize, you guessed it, immigration enforcement.
Republicans fired back, stating the administration is just getting rid of wasteful spending. Panel Chair Andy Biggs questioned the head of Freedom Network. As an example, he says the organization receives nearly $2 million in federal funds.
So you're getting nearly 90% of what you do funded by American taxpayers, and you advocate for legalization of prostitution. Is that fair?
We advocate for the decriminalization, Mr. Biggs. It is not the same as legalization. All workers deserve human rights. No one should be criminalized for the work that they do, either because they have no other choice or because it's the work that they choose.
But victims and advocates say sex trafficking is a crime that can't be justified.
There are many times I tried to stop what was happening. However, every rape had been recorded and used as blackmail to force me into submission, along with other threatening actions that were messages to me to comply.
Advocates say education is key and more funding needs to go to shelters.
They need a place that's safe, and they actually need a place with wraparound services so that they can fully recover and then move on with their lives. And that usually takes at least a year, sometimes 2 years, for long-term care.
And technology like facial recognition.
Homeland Security investigations, the FBI, all of our federal and state partners need to be able to have permission to use that technology. It's a game changer.
Senators plan to reintroduce the Kids Online Safety Act, which gives parents more control and holds tech companies accountable. Last session, it passed the Senate, but Speaker Johnson failed to bring it to the House floor for a vote, citing free speech concerns. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including strength in numbers. New data from Pew Research shows some encouraging signs for the number of Christians in the United States. We'll be right back. back and now to Africa, where at least 11 people are dead and dozens more injured after two explosions at a rally in Congo. And this video right here that you are watching was just moments before the attack when leaders of a rebel group were meeting residents. Hundreds were seen after trying to flee. M23 members are calling on Congolese authorities, saying that it was an act of sabotage. And now to the Middle East, where Hamas has handed over the bodies of four Israeli hostages as Palestinian prisoners and detainees were released in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. This exchange marks the start of the final swap in the 42-day truce between Israel and Hamas, which is set to expire this weekend. Israel has announced that it will not withdraw its forces from the Gaza-Egypt border, a move that would be required under the second phase of the ceasefire agreement. Hamas has accused Israel of potentially undermining the truce, causing it to fail. Meanwhile, emergency responders say several people have been injured in a car ramming incident in central Israel. Israeli police have identified a 53-year-old Palestinian man as the attacker, saying that he has been killed. Officials are investigating the incident as a terrorist attack. Well, a new study suggests a 20-year decline in the number of Americans identifying as Christian may be leveling off. According to a Pew Research survey, 62% of U.S. adults identify as Christian, a number that has been relatively stable since 2019, while still lower than 2007. The survey also shows that the Catholic share of Christian respondents has been stable since 2014. And joining us now to discuss this and more is Greg Smith, Senior Associate Director of Research at the Pew Research Center. So wonderful to see you again, Greg. So walk us through some of the main findings from this survey.
It's really interesting. If you look at trends in American religion over the long-term trends show a picture of decline in religion, including a downturn in the share of Americans who describe themselves as Christians. That's the long-term. The shorter-term picture is very different. Over the last 4 or 5 years or so, the survey and other surveys we've conducted suggest we've been in a period of stability. The Christian share of the population has stabilized after declining for a long time, and the share of the population who says they have no religion has plateaued after growing for a very long time. So the key picture that emerges is one of stability amid a longer period of decline.
Greg, do we know the reasoning for this?
Well, we know that over the long term, a big part of what's driven the declines in American religion is generational replacement. You've had younger Americans come of age with lower levels of attachment to religion than their parents and grandparents before them. That's what's driven some of the long-term declines. And each age group, each birth cohort, if you will, has become less religious as they've aged. But in the short term, those two things are a little different. Each birth cohort has shown signs of religious stability over the last 4 or 5 years, and the youngest Americans aren't actually too much less religious than the second youngest Americans. So they're not tugging down on the nation's overall religiousness as might have been the case.
Greg, what about Catholics specifically? How do those numbers look, and have they remained stable?
The Catholic share of the population has been pretty stable for the better part of a decade now. About 1 in 5 Americans describe themselves as Catholics. That's a little lower than when we first conducted a big study like this back in 2007, but it's been pretty steady for the better part of a decade now.
Yeah, and what do you think these numbers indicate, you know, for the future and the religious landscape in the U.S.?
That's an important question. Is the new stability in American religion likely to be a permanent feature of the American religious landscape? We don't know the answer for sure, but we do know that it's inevitable that older generations of Americans will decline as a share of the population as their members age and pass away. And we know that people coming up behind them are way less religious than older Americans. So unless something changes, unless today's young adults become a lot more religious as they get older, or unless new generations of young adults come of age with higher levels of religiousness than today's young adults, then we might see a resumption of the long-term declines we've seen in American religion.
All right. Very interesting findings there. Greg, thank you so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, final preparations, what to expect from the speakers at tomorrow's 20th National Catholic Prayer Breakfast. Plus, they say those who sing pray twice, a beautiful gesture for the recovery of Pope Francis. Beautiful Serenade was offered to Pope Francis by two musicians just outside of Gemelli Hospital in Rome. The singer said, "This is not a simple song, but a big prayer for the Holy Father's recovery." Beautiful. Well, finally tonight, church leaders and hundreds of lay people are gathering in Washington, D.C. for an annual event combining food and faith. Tomorrow is the 20th National Catholic Prayer Breakfast. The event began as part of the call by Pope John Paul II for a new evangelization. Speakers tomorrow include Vice President J.D. Vance and New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith, a Republican with a long record for fighting for the unborn and religious freedom. And here now with a preview of tomorrow's big event is Mark Randall, the event chair for the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast. Mark, great to see you, my friend. So this year marks 20 years for the National Catholic Prayer Breakfast. Tell us how the event has grown and evolved through the years.
Well, we started in 2004, and it was, you know, an offshoot of the National Prayer Breakfast, which, as you likely know, is an evangelical event. And a couple of us here in D.C. said, you know, we're Catholic, we know how to pray. And that first year, I think we had maybe 400 or 500 people. It's blossomed. This year, we'll have around 1,400. It's gotten so big, we actually moved it to the convention center, which is where I'm here sitting now doing some final preparation. But we're looking forward to it. And it's a simple event, really. It's 2 hours long. We pray. We have fellowship. We have amazing speakers come through. And it's just a joyful morning.
It really is. Mark, tell us why this event really is so important.
Well, pray and pray without ceasing. I mean, it's certainly scripturally based and what our Lord asks us to do. And, you know, it seems like every year I stand up there and say, oh, gosh, it's such a dark time and we really need to pray more than ever. And I think this year you could say that's true, but we have so much to be thankful for. So these are prayers of petition, but also prayers of thanksgiving. And of course, this year we're also deeply praying for the Holy Father's recovery and peace.
Yeah, and that's so important. And I also know you have a lot of great speakers, really an amazing lineup, including the vice president. Incredible to have the sitting vice president attend this year's breakfast. Talk to us more about that.
Well, you know, he attended last year as Senator Vance, and we were thrilled. He was the only senator here last year, I believe. And we heard from him after. He said, you know, that was such an amazing event. You know, I want to try and come every year. And then, of course, you know, he's in a different position now. But we reached out right away as soon as the election was over and invited him. And he said, I will do everything I can to come because I understand the importance of the event. So he's going to be with us for about 20 minutes. And I think it's, you know, everyone is looking forward to his message.
Oh, definitely. And I know the keynote speaker, everyone's really looking forward to Monsignor James Shea from the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota as well. Tell us why you selected him and what are you hoping to hear from him, Mark?
You know, he was one of the headliners at the National Eucharistic Congress last year. And if you've ever heard Monsignor Shea speak or preach, he has just a tremendous way. He's a tremendous orator. He's bright. He's funny. He's deeply spiritual and crazy smart. And he can present a message, I think. Our theme this year is hope, and I know that's what he's going to speak on, and we're all very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, and also looking forward to Representative Chris Smith. He's a pro-life lawmaker, as we know, and he's being given an award tomorrow. Tell us what makes Congressman Smith so special and why you chose him.
I think just because of the longevity of his career. I mean, that man has been working in the trenches for all the things that we as Catholic Christians value. Pro-life issues, religious freedom, on and on. And it really made sense to have him here with us and to give him this award. You know, we've only given this award four other times. And so there are thousands of people we could still be choosing from and will hopefully going forward. But we're super excited to give him a little bit of recognition for the tremendous job he's done for our country and for our faith.
And Mark, we are looking forward to the breakfast tomorrow. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you, Tracy. God bless.
And just a reminder, you can watch the entire National Catholic Prayer Breakfast right here on EWTN. Coverage begins tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern. As we mentioned, the speakers include Vice President J.D. Vance. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.